land and to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and it's episode number 222, or dos. Sitting down with Elizabeth Heath, and this is pretty cool because we haven't done too many of these on location, but I think this may be the very first. Well, let me think if this is accurate or not. No, we did it at a Ward House once, but I was going to say this may be the very first one that we've done from church property before, but we're in the Church History Library. Thank you for inviting me to be here.
You're very welcome.
A couple things that I noticed as we came in. One, if you come to the Church History Library, now the main floor is where people can do their family history research, right?
Yep.
And then the rest is like administrative and all that kind of stuff?
Offices and vaults where we keep the records.
So am I going to be able to see secret stuff today?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Like the sword of Laban is somewhere here in this building, but we're just not going to talk about it.
We don't talk about it, yeah.
What's over there? I don't know. No one goes into the West Wing. Don't pay attention to that.
Right.
But then also, the room that we're in, I find it sort of punny, the name of this conference room. Do you know what the name of this conference room is, Elizabeth?
It's the Far West.
Yeah, it's the Far West. Just one R, though, not two R's, like the church history thing.
That's right.
So thank you for being here. I want to get to know you a little bit before we go into what you do for the church history department.
Sure.
So tell me about yourself.
So I grew up in Utah. Okay. I'm a Utahn. I left the state to go to graduate school.
Where'd you go?
Arizona State University.
Okay. Sun Devils, right?
Yeah.
Sun Devils and the church. Interesting.
That's
already.
That's right. I'm a devil. Mm-hmm. And then I have my degrees in public history and museum studies, which really suited me for this job of acquiring historical documents.
So when you say acquiring historical documents, are we talking like, hey, is that historical or we're researching this or someone says that this is, let's authenticate it? That's the kind of thing?
Yeah, all of that. I seek out documents that tell the story of the history of the church growing around the world. Well, I'm responsible for a third of the world, so just a third.
Oh, just a third. No big deal.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll get into that definitely later. Mm-hmm. And then you decided to come back to Utah?
No, I never wanted to, I never wanted to come back to Utah. And I especially never wanted to work for the church. Mm-hmm. That was on my list of definitely nots, but so was serving a mission.
Was it sort of a rebellious thing?
I don't know, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I feel like I wanted to be more expressive. Mm-hmm. A lot of my research in museums has been controversy.
Okay.
I believe in controversy to start dialogue.
Sure.
And
I don't.
Know.
I never do that here in the Cultural Hall. That isn't a thing that I have never observed. So.
Right. And obviously, when you work for the church, we try to stay kind of non-controversial, mm-hmm. which is okay. It's actually where I am has been excellent for me.
So you said you'd never wanted to come back to Utah, and you also sort of slipped in and hoped that I would maybe not pay attention to the fact that you said serve a mission. So mm-hmm. what's the story there?
Yeah, so through a series of interesting events, I ended up serving a mission when I was 23.
Okay. Did we get to know the series of events?
No.
Okay.
Not this
right.
time.
All right.
Not for public consumption.
Okay.
But I served in the Washington, D.C. South Vietnamese speaking mission.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And that kind of set me up for my interest in church history in Asia.
Hmm. So. And is that a part of the third of the world that you're in charge of?
Yes.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
How was D.C.? What is that experience like?
It was crazy because I landed in D.C. September 5th, 2001. And then...
Oh, okay.
The next week was September 11th.
Yeah, so no big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It was my first zone meeting, so I was just like, wait, what's going on? I don't even know where I am. It was really bizarre because it was so surreal. But yeah, that was an interesting way to start a mission.
What was that experience like being there and being in the church in the capital of the United States? That seems like that would be just a completely bizarre experience.
Well,
or surreal, maybe.
I don't even know if it felt like I was in the United States because I was serving with Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see many white people.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw them, obviously, but I didn't really talk to them.
Most of your interactions. Is there a tremendous amount of Vietnamese people in the Washington, D.C. area?
Yeah. It was one of the main hubs where Vietnamese people gathered after they came as refugees.
Huh.
So.
You know, interesting thing of church history mm-hmm. for you, Elizabeth. My grandparents actually served their mission in Hanoi. They were the two of the first four to serve for the church over in Hanoi. Couldn't talk about religion, but got to go over and live in Hanoi, and they taught them music and English, and were two of the first four.
Yeah, we need to talk about that later.
Okay. Do you know them?
No, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Stedman is their last name.
I need to know them.
Yeah. Well, one of them you can't know until you die, okay. But the other one is still around for sure. Yeah, we could talk about that whenever. So a successful, a fun, an enjoyable mission?
Yeah, it was great. Learned to really appreciate refugees. I think that is one of the major things I walked away with. And that has really channeled my academic work with Vietnamese refugees in the United States.
Talk about that for a minute. What do you mean you learned to kind of love and cherish these folks?
Yeah, so I think, well, I grew up in Kaysville, and in, you know, it's a bit of a bubble.
Yeah. Kaysville is north of Salt Lake for people that don't know.
Right. But I was always friends with the people who weren't members of the church and, you know, the few who were a different race.
Yeah.
Which was just, I don't know, interesting. But I knew there was something bigger out there. And when I got to D.C. and was able to kind of experience some of these things with refugees as they told me their stories, it was incredible. I learned a lot of compassion. And I just learned that life is a lot bigger than I am.
Yeah.
And there's a need for me and everyone to reach out.
And sometimes we get so caught up in ourselves, right, that we think, oh, this is the only thing. Until you have an experience like this, like a mission, like, you know, serving in the military, like something that takes us sort of out of our element even, to be able to go, okay, hold on, let's reframe this whole thing. So maybe not so much me, maybe a whole world of other experiences.
Absolutely. And I remember in the Relief Society meeting when, you know, the sisters were asked to reach out to refugees, I thought, I've been saying this for 15 years.
Well, but not from the pulpit at General Conference.
Exactly. I didn't have the right forum. So I'm really thrilled to see that happening.
So as you see that happening, as someone who has obviously been a proponent of that, dedicated your job, your life sort of to it, what's a takeaway that you have that people can do? I don't really have any experience with it. Mm-hmm. I know a refugee center that's in South Salt Lake that I could go and volunteer time at. But aside from that, like, I wouldn't have the first idea of what to do.
I think the biggest thing people can do is talk to someone. You know, don't shy away when you see someone at the grocery store who looks different from you. Doesn't even have to be a refugee. Just care about people. I think that's the biggest thing you can do. That will change everything.
I like that sort of approach, because even if it's not someone who's from a different country or something like that, it could be someone who doesn't know a lot of people in that neighborhood, or there seems to be a certain amount of civility or neighborliness that we just have sort of given up on as human beings. And it's unfortunate, like you say, that it takes someone from a pulpit saying, all right, how about we take care of other people like Jesus said we should in order to do it. But if that's what it takes, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I think if reaching out to anyone and everyone, all will be cared for.
Any particular mission experiences, like one that I could get you to share that was either faith promoting or challenging, or like, what's your go-to mission story?
There are just so many.
I love them all equally. That's what that sounds like. Come on, everybody has a favorite.
How about an MTC story?
I'll take it.
So I was the only sister learning Vietnamese in the MTC.
In Provo?
Mm-hmm.
So you're there for like 9 weeks, right?
Nine weeks. It was me and 10 elders.
Yeah.
And my companions were going to Korea. Okay. So I spent an awful lot of time alone with the elders in my class, and it was great. We had a great time together. And I remember my companions were picking up Korean so fast, and I was getting really jealous. And I couldn't speak with them.
It's not like a Portuguese Spanish kind of thing. Forgive me, I have no idea about that.
Yeah, totally different.
Just completely different. Mm-hmm.
And I was frustrated, and so it was one of the first days, maybe the first week, our teacher said, "We're going to have a testimony meeting in Vietnamese," and I thought, "You've got to be kidding me! What a joke!" And so people got up and said 5 words, and that was the first time that I felt the spirit like fire. It was amazing. That's one of my favorites.
Did you get up?
I did. Yeah. I was the last one, which is not abnormal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great.
Come on, Elizabeth. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good.
You get up and you're like, Jesus, and that's it. You just knees it down. Right. You're like, good, I got it.
The church is true. Yeah.
So then you get home. Let me see if I'm doing math right. You get home in 2002? Three, right? Spring of three.
Yeah. Well, I actually served for 9 months.
Oh.
And then I ended up coming home. I got sick, had to come home.
Let me ask you a little bit about that experience. I promise everyone listening, we'll talk about the Church History Library. We'll get there, but I want to lay a foundation so people know
absolutely.
Who you are. How was that coming home early? There seems to be a stigma. Did you experience that?
I don't think so because I don't really care.
Yeah. High five. But you know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
obviously,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. My brother was in Peru, and he came home. He tore his ACL, and people were kind of all over that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, commenting on him to the bishop and things.
And that was an older brother or younger brother?
Younger.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the oldest of six.
So you had led the experience to say, hey, you know what? I came home, and I was all right, but he experienced...
He served before I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I kind of had that in mind when I came home. And I was okay. I didn't feel like I heard a lot of anything about me coming home early, so...
It's interesting. I wonder if that's a dynamic between elders and sisters or if people are just, maybe the people were just better at that point, you know,
maybe.
Better to treat you because they had had other experiences with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard some horrible, and we've shared, highlighted some of those here in the Cultural Hall, both the mm-hmm. good and the bad of experiences with people, you know, leaving the church or just saying, forget it
mm-hmm.
because of how they were treated when they came home early.
Yeah. Well, I understand there's a whole counseling center dedicated to missionaries that come home early.
Yeah.
Because it's that hard.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and the other thing to it, too, is, I mean, you went, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So screw you, people who would,
exactly.
would say judgmental things about it.
Right.
So then what? Then did you get... You'd done college, some college, I would presume, before?
Before my mission, I was a medical assistant.
Okay.
And on my mission, you know, things change. And that's when I decided time to go to college. Mm-hmm. So I came home and went to Weber State.
And decided that at undergrad would have been what?
History.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then doing your graduate degree down at Arizona State and
yep.
saying this is a thing. So how did it come that you got the job here, the Church History Library?
Yeah, so I was taking a class in museum administration from the director of a museum that I was working at in Phoenix. And he said, I know this guy named Steve Olson who works for the Church History Department. You're a Mormon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I'm a Mormon. And he said, I think you should sit down and talk with him. And I said, you know, I'm not really interested.
You know, I appreciate what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he said, no, you really should talk to him. And because I thought so much of this man, I said, okay, I'll do it. And so he actually made the appointment for me.
Hmm.
So he wanted me to go. So I came in and I met with Steve. And Steve's amazing. He's an anthropologist. And we just had this wonderful conversation. And I thought, whoa, people like you work for the church. I might be able to do this.
What do you mean, people like you? Give me an idea of Steve's character.
He's brilliant. He's...
Well, there's brilliant people in the church. How dare you say something like that?
No, he's very academically minded. I thought the way he thinks about people was correct.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very open to new ideas and different experiences. And I thought, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone like this to work with. So they weren't hiring at the time. It was when the economy was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had actually just hired a new director for the Church History Museum. And they said, why don't you just go down and talk to him? And I said, okay. So I went and I met with him. And he said, why don't you do an evaluation of the exhibit, the main exhibit in the museum? And I said, sure.
Now what does that mean? I don't know what an evaluation
so
of an exhibit means.
So just walk through and basically kind of grade it, what I think of it.
Brilliant. And, great pictures.
Right. And I just...
Font is far too small on this. Yeah, I don't know.
No, exactly.
That's what... Okay.
Yeah, but also, like, what are the ideas? What are you trying to project?
Okay.
What do you want people to understand? And so I've been going to the Church History Museum since as long as I can remember. My parents are both into art and museums, so we do that. And I remember the very first label in the exhibit, they used the word fundamental. And mm-hmm. I thought, why would you possibly use that word on the main... label into this exhibit, it just to me, it was like fundamentalist Mormons. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that's really weird. So anyway, I just thought, I have nothing to lose here. So I gave him a really honest evaluation and met with him. And that was great. And same thing, we're not hiring right now. So
you're like, great.
Mm-hmm. Keep us posted. Let us know what you're doing. So I did. And that's how I ended up coming back as an intern.
Okay.
And it was great. I mean, I applied for this internship in acquisitions. I didn't even know what that was.
Yeah. As you just give that title, I go, huh?
Right, right. But that's where you acquire
historical
records. And so I started and I loved it. Worked a lot with the missionaries, the full-time missionaries who work here that acquire. Mm-hmm. They help us out. They're amazing. And then about 11 months, I was hired full-time to start.
So I gotta ask you about acquiring, because what it sounds like to me is like a little bit of like, well, these two missionaries are called to go to pawn shops and antiquity stores in the Midwest, or you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Is it that kind of stuff?
In some ways, yeah.
Okay. So how do you get the majority of the things that are being acquired?
So I do a lot of research. I look into church history and then I look into what we have mm-hmm. and I figure out if we're missing things from different people. We call it, targeted acquisitions. We're actively seeking things about specific places and events and people. So
it'd be like, okay. So for an example, we hear more now in the church about it, but we learned about it from South Park about Joseph Smith looking into a hat.
Right.
Right. Do we
mm-hmm.
have the hat?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that kind of thing? Would you be like,
so I don't do much with early church history.
Okay.
It's all more contemporary. Well, that's not true because I also work in the Pacific and missionaries were in the Pacific before the saints arrived here in the Valley. So, I mean, church history goes way back, but it is looking for things like that, but it's also, I'm looking for information more than anything. I'm looking for journals and photographs and correspondence, some artifacts and art. Mm-hmm. It depends on what it is, but I want to find out how the church grew in that place at that time and who was involved.
So give me an idea then, if it's less of artifact and more information, give me an idea of like something that you've recently been working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a big project going on right now in New Zealand.
Okay. How long has the church been in New Zealand?
Oh my goodness. You caught me since, I don't know, 1850s-ish.
Okay. So pretty early on.
Yeah. And I could be wrong, but early on.
I'll give you 1850.
Yeah.
The 19th century.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it gives me an idea of at least what we're talking. Okay.
Yeah. So right now we are in the process of decentralizing church history, kind of like family history has, where they have family history libraries all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We are very slowly doing that with church history.
Okay.
Because we want people to have access to their records. It's, that colonial model of bringing everything to Salt Lake. We want to break that up.
Okay.
And so they are actually building a church history center in New Zealand. It's kind of the first of its kind.
Wow.
Yeah. It's going to have exhibits and records, and people can come in and do research. And that's the only, there are a couple of other smaller places like that. We call them records preservation centers.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the big one. And so I have,
how come New Zealand? How come that was the decision?
The area presidency was really supportive and wanted to get involved. The way the model works is that church history is run by the area presidency. They call people to be church history advisors. It's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's my job and my team's job to help train the church history advisors in how to acquire and do other things. And so there's this interesting employee called, area presidency kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
It's really interesting and fascinating. But the area presidency really wanted to have something in the Pacific. And so that's how this project grew. And, they were also in the process of, tearing down, raising the Church College of New Zealand. And so there was a place where this could possibly go, and that's where it's going.
So as I think about, you're talking about kind of this decentralization, right? Mm-hmm. We all gathered to Salt Lake. That's where we needed to be. And now it's strengthen your own stakes and stay there. Mm-hmm. So then will the idea be that all things will come through here so that there will be like a duplicate? We'll have those documents here or that mm-hmm. history here, and then it will be dispersed to where it's just like I can just find out about the history of the saints in New Zealand in that particular place or here in Salt Lake, or is it just going to be New Zealand?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what's happening is the records stay where they are.
Okay.
If somebody here wants to see something that's in New Zealand, we'll digitize it and send it that way.
Oh, cool.
There's one big church history department catalog that you can get to online. You can see the whole collection.
Sword of Laban.
Mm-hmm. Yep, type that in there. See what happens.
Yeah. We don't currently have that. Richie, please stop asking.
For the 500th yeah. time. Yeah.
It's in a vault and you can't see it.
Right. So we want to be able to share records all over the world. And this is like, we're trying to figure all of this out. And we're getting there.
That's cool.
It's exciting, yeah.
It's very exciting. Mm-hmm. I want to take a break for a minute, and when we come back, I want to talk more about a little bit more of the specifics of what you do, and then I want to ask just some questions that I have about the Church History Department.
Okay.
And then I'm sure other things that will come along the way. Let's take a break. We'll come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, friends. Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. You know, I get a lot of emails with questions from customers, and here's one. Dear Dan, I love to do business at your stores, but I have a lot of Apple and PC stuff. It's too bad because I like doing business with local people. I wish there was a way to make all of my gadgets work together. Signed, Scattered. Dear Scattered, Windows, Mac, Android, we can make all of them sync up for you. Your phone, tablet, and PC. They'll all be one big, happy, diverse family. So Scattered, bring in all your Apple and PC stuff. Now that's comfort and peace of mind. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $799 with a lifetime parts and labor warranty at any PC Laptops location while supplies last. $799, you can't beat that deal. Please visit any one of our locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall and visiting with Elizabeth Heath. We're here in the far west conference room. I don't know why I get such a kick out of that. Here on the, what, second floor?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention this. They had to scan my ID. And for a minute, when we were down at the desk, I got the impression that I wasn't going to be allowed in because the guy said, what did he say? He said, have you been here before?
Uh-huh.
As he scanned my driver's license, and I was like, oh, crap, I'm flagged. I'm not going to be able to go in here. But luckily, we're able to be here and visiting about the Church History Library. I want to ask, these are some curiosity questions that I have.
Okay.
Have you ever been to the big vault at the mouth of the canyon?
I haven't, but...
Are you allowed? Would that be something that you could do?
You have to have special clearance to go there. They were doing some construction, and so they were moving things from one vault to the other, and so they had people go up and help,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't able to go. So a lot of people have, but I wasn't able to go.
And when we're talking clearance, like, it's pretty heavy-duty clearance, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so that eliminates my next question. Of the things that you've been able to observe
mm-hmm.
in your line of work, artifact speaking,
mm-hmm.
what is the most remarkable or memorable thing that you have been able to witness with your eyes? Not a digitized version, mm-hmm. not a picture, not a description from somebody else, but yourself.
Yeah, I think probably the coolest thing was Joseph Smith's journal.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty crazy when they're like, here, do you want to hold this?
yes.
Very carefully.
Did you have to put on gloves and all that deal?
No gloves with paper because it kind of makes your dexterity worse than uh-huh. it is without. So.
Yeah. How was it? Was that awesome?
Yeah.
My eyes are just lighting
beam
up.
Beam of like, light came down from heaven.
I would feel like that would be how it would be, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Is it a fairly hefty?
No, it's small. What, maybe 6 inches by 3 inches or something? It's pretty small.
And that's not something that anyone can go and see, right?
No. No, every once in a while we'll have to get something out to compare it to something else that we're acquiring. You
uh-huh.
know? And so in those very rare instances, you know, there's a chance to see something.
And then the one other curiosity, and then we'll get back to the more serious nature of this whole thing.
Okay.
In the 80s, there was all the church history stuff with Mark Hoffman and the salamander letters and fake church things. Is that still? Well, first of all, do you know enough about it to speak about it?
I know a little bit.
Okay. Because I just realized I sort of throw that in, assuming that everyone knows. So in the 80s, there was a guy named Mark Hoffman who, he was, if I understand it, he dealt in relics.
Rare books.
Rare books.
Records, documents.
And he came to church leaders and said, hey, you know what, I have this document that says that something to do with a salamander, and Joseph Smith, you know, translated the books, and the church said, hey, we'll buy it. As it ended up, he was a liar. He had been stealing the blank pages from other historical books and had done some research on how to make ink appear ancient or older than it was.
Yep.
And then sold these false documents to people, and he tried to kill people, and I think, in fact, did kill someone, and then blew a bomb up on himself.
I don't know about that part.
That might be sketchy. Anyway, he's in prison. He's still alive now. He's still in prison here in the state of Utah. That is the worst rendition of who Mark Hoffman is.
Google it.
And maybe we'll do an episode about that in the future. But is that something that's still within the church history? Like, is that still like a frequent topic of discussion, sort of a black mark where people are like, oh, but remember this? Or is it, what is that?
So that all happened before I was here, long before I was here. But yeah, I think there was a ripple effect. I think after that, you know, acquiring documents stopped. They were reevaluating, you know, how they were going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And
brutal from a couple perspectives, right? Where some people were like, well, why are they trying to buy this thing? Is it a cover up? Are we trying to cover something up in our church's history?
Right.
And then also just the amount of money that was being spent on some of these things. Because I think the church did, in fact, purchase some documents that were falsified.
Yeah. So it did change things for a while. Excuse me. I think people kind of became a little bit gun shy. And I think they kind of have opened up in the time since I've been here and are, you know, more open to acquiring new documents and not being so held back by that baggage.
I'm going to ask you, so you've been here then how long?
6 years.
6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in 6 years, that puts us 2010, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we started.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice, as I have noticed, an extreme push to be more transparent within the church?
Absolutely. I think that started with Elder Jensen. I was only here for about a year when he was here, and then he was made emeritus. But I think that was really important to him, and it's something that we're continuing to move forward. It's so important. People have so many questions. Testimonies are, you know, just disintegrating over church history, and some of it's kind of weird. And I think it's important that we talk about it. Otherwise, people just hear weird stuff and then they don't know the context. And
do you ever, as you have researched or found things, has there ever been things that you're like, what the? Wait a minute.
I don't think so. When I started, I met with a man who was in the ward that I grew up in because he used to work for the church history department. And I just said, what do I need to know? How do you do this? And he said, you just need to separate, you know, kind of your work with your testimony. Sometimes you have to be able to put them in boxes. And I found that to be really helpful because, yeah, some of it's interesting.
Like what? Because I think that some people that are listening to this would be like, yeah, but why aren't you guys talking about the, but I don't want to go into specific things. But for so many people, I think that that's hard to go, here's church history and here's my testimony. It's when they try and merge it and they go, there's dissonance. I don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, and I love dissonance. I think it's awesome. And like I said, controversy, conflicting commandments, all of that. I totally dig it. Like, that makes me feel comfortable.
But so how do you, because I think that faithful member of the church, you'd obviously have to be, right? To work for the church history library. Do you have to be a temple recommend holder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have that. How do you work through the dissonance? Because I think that could be a tremendous... I know you said different boxes, but if you could elaborate on that a little bit. I think that there are a lot of people that go, dissonance, I don't... Mm-hmm. You know, that aren't blessed to be able to have that love of...
Yeah. I don't... That's a good question. I'm not sure how I do it. Like, my friend said it really well one time. She said, I have lots of boxes. And she said, sometimes I'll take a box off the shelf, open it, look at it, decide I can't look at it anymore, put it back on the shelf. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, this is why spiritual experiences are so important, I think, and that we remember our spiritual experiences, mm-hmm. which is the whole point of record keeping, right? Mm-hmm. We need to remember the things that we felt so that we can stay faithful. And it's not always that simple, but mm-hmm. that's actually the really simple version. But I remember when they were planning the new museum, and I was in this meeting, and we were talking about, what's going to go into the exhibit, and somebody started talking about the seer stone and Joseph Smith translating the seer stone, looking into the hat. And I thought, whoa, like, we're really going there. This is getting real. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. And I was so surprised that as I talked to different people about that, they had no idea. And it freaked some of them out.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law, she didn't believe me. And I said, no, I'm serious.
You're like, I work for the church history department. Yeah. Why aren't you believing me right now?
Yeah, it was crazy. But I think that's okay. I think it's okay. It's weird. It doesn't. Or maybe it's not weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, you know, mean Joseph Smith didn't translate the Book of Mormon that way.
I've found it sort of to be a comfort. And then I want to go back to the boxes thing, too. I share this. I've shared this a bunch on the Cultural Hall about the when Stephen Colbert was sort of having at the Mormons a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's like, they believe a young 14-year-old boy went into the mountain and got gold plates. How ridiculous, when everyone knows Moses went to a mountain and got tablets etched from the hand of God. Mm-hmm. It's all sort of weird.
Right.
It either is or it either happened or it didn't. It's either weird or it's not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's where your experience is. Going back to the boxes, I think that that's a great way. You know, I've heard it before, but I guess it's just sort of where I'm at in my life right now, where, I'm recently divorced, and I want to be over that experience as soon as possible because it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize there's only so much I can do, and then I can't do anymore for a little because it's just distance, or for mm-hmm. a while there was... I had things at my old house. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I could only do so much, and then there had to be a time. And then even as now I'm moving, I have boxes, and this is where the visual came to me. I have boxes that I go very intently to get into and go, I'm going to get rid of everything in this box or put this in different boxes so that I can get rid of this whole box. And I get about halfway through, and I go, that's enough for this box right now. We'll come back to this at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't think I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bring in the insight. You talk about records like New Zealand, the stories, the pictures and stuff like that. How do you find that? Is it just the longtime families that are in those particular areas? Or, like, give me an idea. So this New Zealand thing,
mm-hmm.
where do you even start?
Yeah, so start looking at church history in New Zealand, and one of the best places to look are annual histories or minutes. You know, everyone used to send their meeting minutes here.
Okay.
Start to pull out names of people who we should look for, and then look for their families and ask them if they have anything. And then it's amazing. As soon as you talk to one person, they know 10 people. Mm-hmm. And so the projects just kind of explode, and you end up with much more than you ever thought you would. And it's amazing. And that's where I see the hand of the Lord in my life the most, is with these projects
mm-hmm.
and finding people. Sometimes it's very miraculous, and it has nothing to do with me. Like, I was just there. That's all.
It's almost like a reverse genealogy then, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like you find great-great-grandpa, and then you, you know, you're going like, oh, Jesus, this person, maybe mm-hmm. they're related. Mm-hmm. Hi, is your great-great-grandpa, I'm from the Mormon church in Utah. Mm-hmm. is your great-great-great-grandpa Navin? Sure. Mm-hmm. That's. Do you have resistance from people?
No, everyone's usually really open.
Really?
Yeah, and there's a lot of families who, you know, over the years have left the church, and they're also very open because, oh yeah, we have this stuff and we didn't know what to do with it, and mm-hmm. yeah, we know that they'd really want it to be there, and so it's awesome. People are really happy about most. I mean, I can't think of a bad example, but everyone's happy.
Are there opportunities within it then to share the gospel as well, share testimonies?
Yeah, I mean, I've never sat in somebody's living room and bore my testimony. I think that's weird, a little bit weird. I wouldn't
might be overbearing.
But yeah, I think just being a good emissary of the church, they see that, and you know, reminds them a little bit.
I'm reminded as we talk, I can't remember if it was in the county or if in the city, I served my mission in Kirtland, and they were not allowed to teach the gospel in the city of Kirtland until like 1979. Something ridiculously late. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was that late, but it was fairly late. Then Elder Hinckley, not President Hinckley, went and he reopened the city of Kirtland for teaching. But before they did that, or maybe it was the first missionaries that were there, all they did was walk around the streets of Kirtland, go to the mailboxes, write down the address and the last name that was on the mailboxes, and then people would say, hey, pal, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then they would be able to talk to him because they weren't. It must have been before the ban was lifted. Mm-hmm. And they would say, oh, you are Page. Mm-hmm. Are you in relation to Hiram Page? Well, yeah, that's my mm-hmm. great-great-grandpa. Well, did you know that you know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? And I found that to be such a fascinating way for the gospel to be shared. So much different than the, hello, this is Elder Stammons, mm-hmm. Sister Heath, we're sharing.
Yeah, because then it has relevance to them. Like, relevance is everything. If you can't find relevance in a talk, in sacrament meeting or general conference or Sunday school, whatever it is, it means nothing. Mm-hmm. And so if you can approach someone saying, hey, I know about your great-great-great-grandfather, Hiram Page, and all of a sudden, you know, they're perking up and ready to listen.
What do you know about him?
Right, because we all want to know where we come from.
Sure.
And I think we're all kind of narcissists at heart, too. We want to know more about ourselves. And
right?
About, yeah, so.
It would be such a fascinating thing to have that experience, or in New Zealand, to be like, wait a minute, my great-grandfather was this leader of this church here. Mm-hmm. So that is the main consuming project for you right now, yeah?
No.
No? Okay.
Well, New Zealand is just one small part of the third of the world.
What else?
I'm getting ready to travel to the Asia North area in a couple weeks.
Asia North is what?
It's Japan, Korea, Micronesia.
Cool.
Yeah. And in Seoul and Tokyo, there are records preservation centers. Lots of records that need to be cataloged and put into the Church History Library catalog. So me and a couple of colleagues are going to go there and work on that for a couple of weeks.
Jeez.
Yeah. So we're getting ready for that. And then I review everything that the Church History Advisors send to us. They fill out worksheets because mm-hmm. they keep the stuff where it's at. Mm-hmm. But they send us these worksheets that describe it. And I review everything. So I'm in the process of doing that all the time. And then whatever projects pop up, and there's lots and lots. So
anything else exciting that's coming up? Maybe not something that you're involved with directly, but you know, hey, this is going on.
That's it. I don't know. I think the big thing right now is the reconstruction. They're in the process. The library is technically closed for research. Mm-hmm. People can still call in and, you know, go online.
But so what's the deal with that?
They found that the space downstairs just isn't working for us. And mm-hmm. so they're just going to add a couple rooms and a big conference room just to make it better for the researchers that are coming in, the people that come in to use the library. So it's exciting.
When will that be open?
I think in 6 months? So around conference.
Cool.
Next time. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it would sort of, that would be the huge just surgeons here, right? Mm-hmm. Every around conference time, the week before or the week after, people come into town and it's just like.
Mm-hmm.
How are you at your own family history?
Awful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's embarrassing.
I hope that that was the answer, and I appreciate your honesty so much. So how can you, this is, I'm being completely honest. Mm-hmm. I want so badly to care about it at all. Cause I think like you say that it would be fascinating to know, but for some reason, like I think of the old paper family trees or what do they call it?
Pedigree chart. Yeah.
Pedigree chart. And I just think of those and like,
reminds me of dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just go, my eyes start to gloss over and I go, maybe I'll pay 11% this month and God will understand that that's, you know, he'll take the extra percent and be like, okay, family history, I'll inspire someone or your siblings or your uncles or something.
It's not relevant to you yet. You haven't found any relevance in it, so it doesn't mean anything.
So why are you not doing it?
Because I do all this other history. No, I don't have a good reason. I actually have lots of records that I need to scan, and I uploaded one photograph to Family Search one time. So that was
here it is.
That was a thing.
One photo. I've never done that. I just wondered because I thought, you know, if it's a thing where you're like, yes, and I just can't get enough of my own, or if it's just like, man, I do this all the time.
No, I need to be better. And I just need to know, because I had a really interesting experience here. I was making a list of missionaries who had served in the Swiss German mission, and I was going through the list and I came across a name, and it was Milton. Who was it? Mitchell. No, Reuben Milton, whatever. I should know his name better. Anyway, I was like, wait, I think that's my grandma's brother. And then I thought, no, he didn't serve a mission. He started his own church. So that's not him.
So maybe not him.
But then I thought, oh, this is their father. And my grandma and her sisters would never say anything about their father. I don't know why. I think he was a shady guy, maybe. And so I thought, this is my one chance to like know something about him. So we didn't have the journal. We just had it on microfilm. So I ran downstairs and pulled up the microfilm and start looking through it. And I noticed when he would write, he mixed his B's and his P's. And I've done that my whole life. Mm-hmm. And like, there was just like this little piece of me that clicked into place. And it was really weird. Cool. But that's the kind of stuff that makes it relevant and interesting. And I thought, I need to know more about this man.
All right. I'll be better if you'll be better. Pinky promise.
Okay. I'll do it. Yeah.
Let's take a break for just a second and we'll come back and I'll let you dictate the last thing as to anything that you feel like we should talk about.
Okay.
And then you know the three questions that are coming your way. So we'll get to that here in just a minute in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall here on the second floor of the Church History Library, downtown Salt Lake. I see a beautiful view of the tabernacle right there, the conference center out the window right there. You know, I used to live downtown, and from my front porch I could see the state capitol and Salt Lake Temple. It was great.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Went to church in the what used to be the Hotel Utah is now the Joseph Smith Memorial Building. I wasn't in the same ward, but I was in the ward across the hallway from the prophet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you got to church late, you had to wait for the prophet security detail to go by. And it's like, oh, come on, I'm teaching today. Come on, let's get up the stairs. Come on, let's do this. It's funny how you get sort of rushed about things.
Yeah.
but a unique experience for being here. I also I didn't mention this earlier. There are security bars that keep you from where we're at that I thought that was cool. That was like straight out of like a Mission Impossible film, like the to get me into where we're at right now.
Yeah, this is the most secure floor of the building because this is where we bring all the new things and we have a lot of stuff just laying out.
Jeez.
And so they just put cameras in everywhere. And yeah.
What kind of background checks? Do you guys have
I don't
to do
know.
That stuff?
I'm sure they do, but I don't know. I don't know what church security does.
Yeah.
They're the whole own thing.
So we got to assume then that you're clear, because if there's anything shady in your past, you wouldn't be able to be here.
That's true.
All right. So what did you want to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to talk about the importance of diversity in church history and the importance of people telling their own stories. I love in this new decentralized model that people are doing oral history interviews in the language that the interviewee knows. You know, I can go interview people in English and they can answer me in their language and it's awkward and we're not, you know, getting the best information. But if somebody in Vietnam is called to be a church history advisor and they can go interview somebody else in Vietnam, what an amazing story that can be captured. I just have this big thing about history being written and told on the terms to those whom which it belongs. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Okay.
But I did a several language ward projects here in the Valley. I mean,
what does that mean?
So language wards are just wards that speak any language other than English.
Okay.
And there are many in the Salt Lake area. I've done interviews in the Swahili branch. There's a Karen Karini branch. They're refugees from Burma. There is a Chinese ward. There's a German ward. There's a Russian ward. There's a Nepali branch. There was a Vietnamese ward, but now they're kind of in with an English ward. There's several Tongan wards and, of course, Spanish wards and Samoan wards. And I think that many times those wards don't necessarily get their annual histories in because they're dealing with things that are a little bit more important, perhaps. More crises, I guess. And I'm so glad that I was able to do those interviews and kind of get a baseline for what's going on in the language wards. But I'm looking forward to the day when refugees in those church units, they're not all refugee units,
sure,
obviously, but can come forward and tell their own stories. I just want to be a facilitator. I just want to sit back and watch it happen. And that's that. And church history, like I said, if it's not relevant, it doesn't help you. It doesn't matter. It's hard to feel the spirit. And so I just am so excited for the way things are going because we're going to get there.
What are annual histories?
Oh, my gosh. That's a
I don't
great
know
question.
That I don't know that I know what... I mean, I can guess that they're once a year or some sort of historical something, but I don't actually know what they are.
You're absolutely right. So every year, each church unit is required...
So like a ward, a branch, a district?
Yes.
Okay.
All of it. Missions. They are required to submit an annual history to the church history department. And twice a year, we meet with the area presidencies, and the area presidencies are responsible to tell Elder Snow like what percentage of annual histories has been turned in for the year. So it's a big deal.
Right. Well, what kind of stuff is in an annual history?
Our church
attendance was 73%. Our amount of tithing, is it very statistic factual based? And then David Applegate, he got up in the middle of primary and he said, Mommy, is it like, what kind of stuff is it?
So it's both of those things. Sometimes it's very, very basic, right?
Okay.
Most simple form, what do they call it? Officer sustained form and a calendar, because that you can just print that off the internet. One of my bishops works here. We're not in the same ward anymore, but his annual history is huge. I mean, he would take talks that he thought were important that were given throughout the year and have put them in the annual history, and photographs of youth camps, and, have the different church auxiliary officers and quorum members write accounts of their ministry for the year. And they're actually the most requested records that we have, because you can find yourself in those. And like people want to find themselves in the history. They want it to be relevant. And there are a lot of histories that are written, you know, the 50th anniversary history of whatever ward. And so we receive those all here from all over the world every year. It's pretty amazing. The things that are in those annual histories and the things that are not in those annual histories.
Yeah. Like what? Give me examples on either side of that. Because as people can't see, but maybe they can hear it in your voice, sort of a smirk of like, interesting that you decided to include.
Yeah. So Utah, and I don't know the statistics, so I can't tell you, but the percentage of submittal of annual histories is very low.
In Utah?
Yeah, it's really strange. But the church history advisor in Ghana manages to get 100%. And, you know, he's like riding on boats and stuff out to church units to train them on how to do an annual history.
Yeah.
So we get all kinds of facts.
We're lazy. It's terrible.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? It's really not too hard. Anyway.
No, but you're, but that's the thing. I mean, we don't want to harp on it, but come on.
Yeah. And I'm just going to put a plug out there. If people want to know more about how to do an annual history, they can contact me or they can go to the, history.lds.org and ask a question and we can send you information on how to do an annual history.
Because is that someone's calling in the ward?
It can be.
Okay.
A lot of wards have a ward historian. And so, I mean, that's ideally the best way to do it. Sometimes it's clerks. It just depends on who gets assigned to do it. And it's in the handbook. It says, you know, do this, but...
So
it doesn't get
I
done.
Wonder if it's just a thing that, because I don't know that I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, and that could be. That could be. Well, they used to keep minutes, but they stopped that in the 70s sometime. And so that was a big deal. I mean, there were minutes of all these awesome meetings. There's great stuff in those minutes. But they kind of, after that, I don't think the transition was really good. And I think they kind of started annual histories and then took a break and then started up again. So,
and it's important, dang it.
It's really important.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun to do. I've thought about this just on sort of a family level, but I mean, there's no reason it couldn't transcend to a ward, but essentially just do like a podcast of your ward. Like this month, we're meeting the Heath family. You know, you spend 20 minutes, hey, where are you guys from? What is it that you're here? Oh my gosh, that's great. And you're this. And wouldn't that be a fun thing to go back and visit?
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be paper.
Yeah.
I mean, think outside the box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I will.
That's a good way to do family history.
So that's a thing that is not included. What are some things that are included that you're just like, what in the world is this?
I don't know that I've received any. I don't see all of them that come through. I only see a small percentage.
A third.
No.
33%.
I don't even see that much, but it's not necessarily the things that do come through. Stories, miraculous stories of the restoration.
Cool.
That, I mean, the church is like in the Nauvoo phase in different parts of the world. Those same miracles are happening in different parts of the world. For some reason, we don't, or I'm not going to speak for everyone. I don't see those things in my life like I think the early saints did. But there are early saints in different countries who are experiencing those things. And those are the things that are fascinating that come through in annual histories. I don't have a specific story necessarily, but those are the things that help me, help my testimony grow here.
Yeah.
Yeah, within church history.
Okay, so annual histories. What else? What else do you want to talk about that we need to get in here before we get rid of each other?
How about the difference between church history and family history?
Yes, please.
So I say church history, and everyone hears family history. But church history is not family history. People will come to meet with me and go to the family history library. So I just wanted to give a little separation there. They obviously overlap a lot, but church history is documenting how the church has grown in this dispensation, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's amazing. Family history is more genealogy for temple work. And so I just wanted to give family history and church history just a little simple
distinguishment.
Yes.
It's like I always think with Kirkland and Kirtland.
Yes.
I just want to scream at people. Kirkland is Costco. Kirtland is church.
That's right.
Are we paying attention? Family history is genealogy. Church mm-hmm. history is the earth history of the church.
Yeah.
How much involvement does the brethren have in church history?
Yeah. So our department is run by Elder Stephen E. Snow. He's the church historian and recorder. He's in the first Quorum of the 70. He has two advisors in the Quorum of the 12, Elder Runland and Elder Cook.
Okay.
And so they, I don't know how often they meet together, but they know what we're doing here.
Do they ever come around and everyone's like, and you're like, shoot, hey.
No, I've never seen that, but that would be amazing.
But they don't make their way over here very often.
No, but they do. One of them will speak to us once a year.
Cool.
Yeah, it's way cool.
Is that documented? Are those
speeches?
Yeah,
it is. Actually, it was really interesting. Elder Holland used to be one of the advisors. Mm-hmm. And
lucky.
I know, right?
I mean, not that Elder Renlund and Elder Cook aren't amazing, but come on, Elder Holland, right?
Exactly. But he came and spoke to us one time, and he must have been burned recently because he said, I just want to tell you all to not record any of this. I need to be free to say what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I thought, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting in the day when, you know, with people with their recording devices and stuff like that, how not in context people can bring things up mm-hmm. and then quickly it's just
yep.
is what it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you three questions before I let you go.
Okay.
The first question is, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I do. I'm a Relief Society instructor.
Nice. So once a month?
Mm-hmm.
Best calling. Mm-hmm. That was the Elder's Quorum until last week. Second, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
You know, I love my calling because I get to put kind of a feminist spin on the lessons. Mm-hmm. And the sisters love it. And yeah, I love it.
Is there, you bring up an interesting question in that, and I just kind of make an aside. Is there... I hope the answer is yes. The documentation or the gathering of history of women.
Oh, absolutely.
As far as the church. I mean, certainly in each of the areas, but a focus on as women become, I don't want to say more empowered, although that's exactly what I mean. I mean, mm-hmm. that's important to a lot of people. That is a thing.
Yeah. We have an embarrassingly small amount of history of women in the church for lots of different reasons. And it is my personal mission to change that. And any of my colleagues would say that I kind of beat them over the heads with that.
Really?
So, yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing thing. A pioneer of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to ask you before we let you go is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I think my favorite part of my faith is just feeling the blessings of the atonement. And I don't feel it all the time. I don't know if we're supposed to feel it all the time. But the times where I've needed it, it's there. And that is miraculous to me. And that's what keeps me going.
That's cool. I would think, like you sort of alluded to earlier, there probably is some really challenging times for testimony and just for anyone, right?
Sure. I think testimonies are kind of cyclical.
Yeah.
Like the pride cycle.
I'm great. I'm great. Oh, no.
What happened?
I'm going to pray a whole lot. Do all the things I'm... Oh, I'm great again.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's depressing.
Or just expected, right? Like now it's just like, no, I've done this before. We'll get back.
Right.
I appreciate you taking a few minutes. It's Elizabeth Heath, who is a church...
Global acquisition specialist.
Ah, you said it better than I did because you know it. Anyway, thank you for taking so much time. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned if people wanted to get in touch with you, if they had any questions, what is the best way for them to do that to you?
You can email me at elizabeth.heath@ldschurch.org.
Okay. So people can reach out there. Any questions, anything that we referenced, you can reach out to her and get in touch there. I'm excited to find out who's in charge of my annual history and my ward, for crying out loud.
They might make you.
Well, it's a brand, and I'm in a brand new mid-singles ward, so they probably will make me.
You should ask for it. It wouldn't be a bad job.
Okay. I'm done. That's it. It's over. I'll get a record how many marriages there were.
That's right.
How many awkward linger longers we have. Just Terrible.
That's important.
No, it is important.
It's church history.
It absolutely is. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.